Hi, Foxies. The episode you're trying to listen to is right around the corner, but first, we need your help. You may have noticed that there are no ads during The Fox and the Foxhound. We prefer this, being ad haters ourselves, but we need your help to keep it that way. If you love this show, please consider signing up as a patron at patreon.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. We have Patreon tiers starting at just $1 a month. And not only will you get fun extra content and an unedited cut of every episode 2 days early, you'll be directly responsible for keeping the show going in all of its ad-free glory. Thanks to all of our existing patrons, past patrons, and hopefully future patrons. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to The Fox and the Foxhound. We're so happy to have you. If this is your first time, my name is Amanda, and my husband Kevin and I are reading through the Harry Potter books together. While I'm an established fan, he's a complete Potter virgin. We started the series and this show during the countdown to our wedding. And now, as we work through the final book in the series, we've been married for 2 years and have our first child on the way. While our primary goal is to work through the Potter series as literature, discussing the story and applying some of the wisdom we find to our life together, be warned, tangents lie ahead, and singing. And grown-up jokes, some occasional toilet humor, and fairly pervasive adult language. Guard tiny ears accordingly. Let's do this.
Do-do-do-do-do. Welcome back. Tonight we have a very special episode. Fox and the Foxhound After Dark. We got a big old cauldron full of sultry tunes coming your way this evening.
Yeah.
This is the first time in a long time that we've recorded after the sun went down.
Not only are we recording far later in the day than normal, but also it was just daylight savings time.
Which means we did not spring forward. We fell back.
We fell back.
So 7 o'clock turns into 6 o'clock.
It's awful. Like, so we really need to do away with this.
So what that means is I get out of work at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
The sun's going down.
Yeah.
Right? In the wintertime, it will change. But for right now, the sun's going down about 6:15.
Yeah.
Now, when I get out of work, the sun's already been down for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It also means you get more light in the morning.
Yeah. Which I like. Great, yeah.
But it's cold.
Right. But I mean, that's okay. Like, you put more clothes
Fox
on.
And the Foxhound After Hours.
This is like, you remember when, like, what was
Go
it?
Go ahead, disrobe. It's time for Fox and the Foxhound After Hours.
What was it? Cinemax? Cinemax After Hours would, like, turn into porn or something?
I'm sure I watched it scrambled or something, but I don't think we had Skinemax when I was growing up.
Skinemax, right.
Do you remember the Tim Meadows sketch on SNL? You can kiss my ass on The Quiet Storm.
Yes.
He was making fun of that, like, Quiet Storm, like, nighttime radio show that would play, like, really soulful R&B and like romantic R&B stuff. But it was like he was a DJ that just didn't care what he was saying. We'll have to watch it. It's
Tim
so
Meadows.
Funny. One of the funniest people
genius.
On the planet.
What a yeah. genius. What a legend.
This is the first time I've worn my progressive bifocals, folks.
Yep. You've got fancy ass glasses now.
Yeah. I have old man glasses now.
You know, you don't have to keep calling them old man glasses. Nobody else calls them that.
They were like, yeah, you see in far away. Not the greatest. And I went, that's cool. Also, you seeing up close, also not the best. But your problem is really going in between the two.
Right.
Is not what it used to be.
Right.
And boy, have we got a surprise for you. Dad glasses.
They're so attractive.
I like them a lot.
They're super classy.
They're hard to get used to.
Yeah.
But I think that the benefit is going to outweigh the whatever the opposite of the benefit is. The negative part.
The challenges. The benefits will outweigh the challenges.
One day I'm going to convince you guys I'm way smarter than I sound on this podcast. I mean, not much at all, but like
you
a little
smart.
Bit. I'm a little bit smarter than I sound.
You are definitely smart. It's been a long day. We've both had a lot of crap
Reach
going
down
on.
Your hand in your pocket now. Pull out some hope for me. It's been a long day.
Okay. Anyway, we've both had a lot going on today. We're both like rallying with some like late in the day coffee, which I think that everyone probably could already tell that about you, at least at this point.
This is like the old bourbon podcast, but without the bourbon. Yeah. We don't even need the bourbon anymore. We're just crazy.
Can you imagine the first episode we record after I give birth and I can have some bourbon?
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Slip off that silky robe. Pour yourself a strong, strong butterbeer and settle in for Fox and the Foxhound After Dark.
After Dark. So weird. Should we talk about Harry Potter now?
Sure. This is a one chapter episode.
Yeah.
Chapter 6, Ghost in the PJs.
The ghoul.
How are you going to put PJs on a ghost? They just going to fall right through him.
The ghoul in pajamas is the name of the chapter.
Sing it with me now. Bananas in pajamas.
Yeah, are coming down the stairs. Isn't that the word?
I don't know, but I do want to know, UK and beyond listeners, non-continental United States listeners, do you say PJs as short for pajamas?
I would hope so. PJs.
This is what I think the evolution of pajamas in vocabulary should be. PJs are what little kids wear. Okay, it's 7 o'clock, time to go put on your PJs,
right?
Brush your teeth and put on your PJs. Yeah. PJs have some sort of little character on them, Peppa Pig or some shit, you know?
Oh, I didn't realize there were like strict rules about PJs. You know, okay.
Spider-Man or whatever, like cute little PJs.
Yeah.
And then when you get older, they're pajamas.
They're okay? Distinguished.
They're sleepwear. They're pajamas.
They're sleepwear.
Now, there's some people that have graduated into the mature adulthood level of pajamas.
Sure.
But they refer to their pajama pants as pajama bottoms.
Or PJ bottoms.
Or PJ pants. But PJ no one says PJ bottoms.
Except I just said it spontaneously. PJ pants.
Welcome back. This is DJ. DJ PJ bottoms. And I'm DJ Horse Pants. What about horse PJ bottoms?
Those would be no different. The debate about the logistics would be no different than the debate about regular horse pants.
But you wouldn't need a belt because they're generally elastic.
Right.
If your pajamas have a belt, guys, they're just pants.
Unless it's a robe. Robes have belts. And sometimes people sleep in robes.
Some people do magic in robes.
I mean, you like a bathrobe.
You're going to have a magical night tonight. Fox and the Foxhound.
After hours.
It's after dark or after hours?
You keep switching it. Oh, fuck. Can we talk about this book now, please?
No.
You are reading first.
Am I ever? The shock of losing Mad-Eye hung over the house in the days that followed. Harry kept expecting to see him stumping in through the back door like the other order members who passed in and out to relay news. Harry felt that nothing but action would assuage his feelings of guilt and grief, and that he ought to set out on his mission to find and destroy Horcruxes as soon as possible. Is it assuage?
I think it's assuage.
I just like assuage. It sounded like massage, and since it's after dark, I was just like, I think I'm getting sensual.
I like
with my
assuage.
Words.
I like assuage.
I like a good swash as much as the next guy. Fuck.
Okay, can I read now?
How much you want for your swash?
Okay, it's my turn to read. Jesus H. Christ. She looked at him, a long, searching look, then smiled a little sadly, straightened up, and walked away. Harry watched as she waved her wand near the washing line, and the damp clothes rose into the air to hang themselves up, and suddenly he felt a great wave of remorse for the inconvenience and the pain he was giving her.
So like I read, everyone in the house is in grief over Mad-Eye,
yeah.
Sort of hanging over everything.
Yeah.
So as we'll see throughout the chapter, the biggest thing that's on the trio's mind is getting through this wedding and going and hunting some Horcruxes.
Right.
And there's this conversation that goes on, and Harry can't hunt Horcruxes until he's actually 17, which is something that I kind of forgot.
Yeah.
Well, he's got this trace on him,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the trace. It's because he's underage. He can't use magic. He's already been warned, but he's got an ankle bracelet.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, yes.
It's like, can you go to the store and get me cigarettes? Like, I have an ankle bracelet.
Nah, dude, I'm on probation. I have an ankle bracelet.
And this is the trio kind of talking about like horcruxes and stuff. We have two major conversations about horcruxes.
Yeah.
The second one being like really juicy. And
we learn
wait to talk
a ton.
About.
Yes.
Hermione's been doing her own research.
Of course. Not like I'm doing my own research about the vaccine, but like doing her actual research.
Yeah, she's been watching YouTube videos from people that she admires.
She's been checking what Q has to say about the horcruxes.
But they can't go out and hunt horcruxes yet because they need to stay an extra day because Bill and Fleur's wedding's going on. And that's the major buzz in the house. Yeah. Now, I kind of feel like Molly is as the matriarch, which God, I love this character so much.
She's a great
character. I think she has really clung to this wedding, not only because she's a good mom and she wants her son to have this great wedding, but because it's like forcing normalcy back on their family again.
I think that's a really good point. Yeah, because she's so invested in everything being perfect too. You know, it's not just normalcy. It's also, it's something that's within her control at the moment.
And Molly's having a hard time. So she's finally got everyone back at the Burrow. Yeah. She also knows she lives in the most dangerous potentially situation in the world.
Absolutely. Like,
because of mad, crazy protective charms, chances are the Death Eaters aren't getting in anytime soon.
Yeah.
But you can't leave anything to chance with Mr. Riddle.
Right. Mr. Riddle.
Right.
Senor Riddle.
Senor Riddle.
Yes.
Because one Horcrux was destroyed. Then he went back to like Thomas. Then it was like Tommy. Thomas. Then it'll go back to like Tom.
Is he eventually just like T? T Rids.
TR. So she corners HP because what she knows is as soon as this kid can get out of here, he's going to get out of here and go try to fight evil.
Absolutely.
And he's going to bring my freaking son with him. And he's going to bring Hermione with him. And who the hell knows what else of my kids are going to follow in this thing. And she's terrified.
Yeah.
That her kids like want to go off and fight this war.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, she's definitely terrified. And so she's going to corner Harry. We'll talk about that conversation in a second. But she's also like trying to make sure that the three of them are not in the same room together. So they can't like plot. They can't plan anything. Which, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword, though, because like if you think that your kid's going to go anyway, then wouldn't you want him to be ironing out some of the details about this plan before you leave? Or do you want him to leave totally unprepared?
I don't think there's any way that a parent, and we're going to say Molly is basically a parent to Harry, the way she loves him.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
There's no way that a parent can reconcile with themselves their child going off to war.
Yeah.
You know, it's you might be supportive of them. I know that you like are in service and this is what you're called to do. And I'm proud of you, whatever, but how could it not be completely consuming her? And you know, people have died. Mad-Eye just died.
Yeah.
Like they are out to murder her entire family and Harry and everybody.
Absolutely.
So she does corner Harry.
Yeah.
And she's like, so heard, you and your homies are dropping out of Hogwarts.
I love that Harry's just like, yeah.
He's like, yeah, that's
what's happening.
What we're doing.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you going to do? Like, are you going to go to community college? Are you going to like get your GED? Like, what are you going to do?
Right. What's your plan?
And he's like, I mean, I got some shit I got to take care of for my man Dumbledore, my grandpa who died. And she's like, that was your granddad? I thought he was the headmaster. And he said, have I got the podcast for you?
Molly also, speaking of Dumbledore, Molly seems a little irritated that Dumbledore set this mission. She's like, he had this whole order, you know, and I think if I were in Molly's shoes, I probably would feel the same way. Like, okay, what exactly were we laying our lives on the line for the past couple years as part of this reformed Order of the Phoenix? Yeah. If he needed something done, why didn't he just tell us? Now, of course, Harry knows why, and we know why. But Harry can't really get into it. He just says, it has to be me.
Yeah.
You know? And of course, that's because of the prophecy.
It's weird that Dumbledore is kind of sacrificing Harry in a weird way.
Mm.
He's like, it has to be, you have to do this with only the protection of your friends.
Yeah.
But it's not only, hey, you're going to endanger a lot of other people unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Which Harry is already feeling that grief anyways.
Of course.
But it's if they interfere with your plan, evil will destroy the world. Like, you are our hero. You're Superman. It must be done this way.
Yeah.
And I feel like Molly is such, like, one of the most humanized characters in the series.
Definitely.
And I feel like Molly knows in her heart, just like Ron and Hermione and a lot of other characters know, like, we might not have Harry Potter around for our entire lives.
Right. Right.
Like, the thing that he's called to do, battle the most evil man in America. No, battle the devil, basically, like, the most evil dude in the world. Like, this could end his life.
Yeah.
Also, it kind of sounds like, seems like maybe it might be necessary for Harry to lose his life in the process of this. So I don't think that's lost on the other characters.
Right.
That's part of it, too.
Yeah.
It's not just, hey, I don't want you to go out and do this thing. It's like, don't make me keep saying goodbye to you.
Yeah, that's because a really good point.
One day, you guys are going to fly out that door in your brooms and you're not all coming back.
Right, right. I mean, I can't imagine really being any of the adults in this situation, especially Molly, but also, like, all of the adults, I think, feel some responsibility for these kids, even though some of them are barely kids anymore or almost not kids anymore. These adults have had this diffused responsibility for these kids, especially Harry, because he doesn't have parents who are responsible for him.
Yeah.
So they've all become like parents to him.
And they all love him like parents.
Yes.
And all the kids.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, we can't forget, like, Ginny and Ron and Hermione, like, all of them are, they're protective of them too.
Yeah.
It's got to be just an absolutely gut-wrenching situation.
So we find out that there's about 20 people in the order.
Yeah.
And they became the secret keepers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, break down for me how the secret keeper thing works again.
Okay. So the Fidelius charm protects a location. So if someone's hiding out, then you would have a charm that completely conceals the location. You can't visually see it. You can't hear it. It is not existent to anyone who does not know the location of it. And the only way you can know the location of a place protected by the Fidelius charm is if the secret keeper has told you. Mm-hmm. So there can be at least one. It's a little mysterious if there can be more than one original secret keeper. But all we need to know is that for number 12 Grimmauld Place, Dumbledore was the secret keeper for this location. So they were keeping Sirius hidden there, keeping the order hidden there.
Their meetings, everything.
Absolutely. But in order for any of the order members to have meetings there, they had to be given the secret by the secret keeper, Dumbledore.
Right.
When he died, everyone who then, it was almost like the second level of secret keepers, like, everyone that he had given the location to then becomes a secret keeper by default. But the more there are, weaker the charm.
Not only the more there are, the weaker the charm, just as how the magic works, but that's 20 more people, 19 more people than one that can make a mistake and slip up and tell the wrong person.
Exactly. Exactly. Not to mention the fact that, remember who one of those members of the order who was?
Mundungus effing Fletcher.
I was thinking of Snape, but.
Oh, well, Snape. This is another thing I had in my notes that I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
It's like, we could almost do an entire episode about what did Snape know when?
Right.
And what is he doing with that information now?
I think we should do that episode.
We haven't seen Snape in a while.
Right.
And it's really worrying me that when he comes back, he's coming back in a multi-chapter, big, big way.
Yeah, and I mean,
but they, I also want some backstory on him.
Right, right, of course. And I think that Snape will easily earn his own episode after we finish the series. Because, you know, I've said one of the things I really want to do when we finish the original books is I would like to start doing deep dives on characters.
Yeah.
And Snape is, as much as I hate the man, you know, like, still a character that's really compelling to talk about in terms of a literary character. But, you know, they say that Mad-Eye put some protections in place, a couple of charms in place. They don't really elaborate on that to try and get Snape if he tries to go snooping around there. But ultimately, it's not a safe place.
Yeah.
At least not for the order as a whole to meet.
And no one's safe when the Death Eaters are around.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's been no news about Mad-Eye's body, first of all.
Right, like Lupin and Bill didn't find it.
Lupin and Bill were not able to find his body. Mm-mm. It makes them cringe to think about what the Death Eaters might have done with his body. They also are like, he fell 1,000 feet. Like, how do we know exactly where he fell? We could have, like, a million different things could have happened.
Yeah.
Then it kind of, they're postulating on, what if Mad-Eye didn't actually die?
Right. This is what the trio is talking about. Okay,
well, one, it was a death charm or a death curse.
Yeah.
So death curses typically kill you. I mean, second of all, if it didn't kill him, he fell like 1,000 feet.
There's no way.
And then I think Harry or somebody says, yeah, but he could have put a something charm. And they're like, bro.
I think it's like, it's Ron. Harry's the one who's like, y'all, he's dead. Like, he's straight up dead.
Yeah, pretty much.
And, you know, they're also mentioning at the table the fact that the ministry's not talking about this. The newspapers aren't talking about this. Everything's being hushed up. You know, one thing that probably hadn't occurred to you as the reader is the fact that, like, with the ministry being so crooked right now, with it being infiltrated, why haven't they used Harry's performing underage magic during this transport, you know, Wingardium Leviosa and all that? Why haven't they used that as an excuse to come arrest him?
Yeah.
They're like, well, because it's messy, because then they would have to admit that something happened and they're not going to do that.
They would have to, because there's a couple things happening.
Yeah.
One, they're pretending like they haven't been infiltrated.
Yeah. So there's that. The people who are not affiliated with the Death Eaters.
Yeah, or they are Death Eaters. Right? Right, so it's completely messed up.
Yeah.
But it would be to admit Voldemort's power. What do you mean what happened? It's like people would put 2 and 3 and 4 together and be like, oh shit, the Death Eaters and Voldemort, this shit is back.
Yeah.
And two, they haven't said shit about the Azkaban breakout.
Right.
Like to the wizarding world.
Right.
Much less like, I wonder if Scrimgeour has told the Prime Minister about the Azkaban breach.
Right. I mean, it's so shocking to see Stan Shunpike because he's supposed to be an Azkaban. So it is kept totally hush hush. And the Death Eaters that have infiltrated the ministry, they don't want this talked about either because they like to operate in the shadows. They don't want the public to start putting all kinds of protections and roadblocks in their way.
Yeah.
So both sides at the ministry and thus the Daily Prophet are motivated to keep all of this a secret. Mad-Eye's death, the Azkaban breakout, Harry using underage magic.
And this is how media works.
I mean, it's on the nose. So Fleur brings up, and they're talking about the wedding, and Fleur brings up, we have to find a disguise for you. You know, you can't be you at the wedding. We don't know who's going to have too much champagne. And, you know, we obviously trust everyone who's coming to the wedding. It's like, we obviously trust that everyone is vaccinated, but we don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
I've got a suggestion
for
the Weasleys.
Yeah.
Maybe now is not the best time to have a wedding.
Yeah, but what did you say at the beginning of this episode? This is so much more than just a wedding.
Right.
This is a way to feel a little bit of normalcy.
Like, are they going to invite people from outside of their little group to come? Do all these people come into the burrow? Like, Fleur's parents, are they going to be aunts and uncles? Is a DJ coming into the burrow through magic? How many fucking port keys are you going to have? Eventually, somebody's going to see the 165 port keys with white balloons tied to them.
Well,
what are they, champagne glasses? Don't even.
But listen, that would be pretty clever.
Oh, how cute.
That'd be kind of clever, actually. But remember, the Death Eaters are really only interested in Harry right now. Like, if people got in the way and they knew that Harry was on the other side of a bunch of people, would they mow them all down? Sure.
Yes. Yeah.
But if they don't think Harry's there, they're not going to waste their fucking time. So that's the whole thing is,
it just seems sloppy. Like,
that's why Fleur is saying we have to disguise you so that nobody knows that you're here.
Also, let's say that they know about, all right, here you go. So around the burrows, all these charms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Death Eaters are probably flying 150 yards above us right now, like just outside the bubble of the charms. Could they not see people flying in the general direction of the burrow? Right?
That's not how port keys work.
Well, they're flying to the port. Where's the port key? Just outside the burrow, right? Or you don't
know? No, not necessarily. Yeah, it could really be anywhere.
Yeah.
That's the whole beauty of the port key. That's why they flew the real Harry to the Tonkses.
What I'm imagining the port key is in. Like this invisible bubble with this ring of port keys around it.
No.
Bill and Fleur Weasley are getting married. Like,
no, you know what I mean? No, the port key, wherever they're going to take a port key from, is that port key is going to deliver them pop. At the burrow, within the protective bubble.
It just seems like, you know, the FBI, like any major city's police department could probably find Harry right now. They're like, all right, the last time we saw him flying was here. We know that it's probably protected by charms, but geographically, we kind of can figure out where it is. If we monitor all of the traffic coming within a 60-mile radius of where we know the burrow is, even though it's protected, and do facial recognition scans on them, right? And then put it into Google and find out, wait, this is Mr. and Mrs. Daniel Johnson.
But,
and then you look at their email and you see that they're going to a wedding. Like,
the fact that there's a wedding at the borough does not mean that Harry is or is not there. Like, that's the part that you're linking them inextricably.
Right.
Like, the wedding's kind of beside the point. Like, you know, is it a little risky to have the wedding for the sheer fact that there will be people there who if Harry doesn't disguise himself, yeah, could see him and later say, oh, yeah, I saw Harry at the borough the other weekend. But besides that, there's really not a lot of risk any more than normal to having the wedding.
Also, don't these people know his family? Aren't they going to show up and be like, yo, so Molly, like, whatever happened with Harry Potter?
Right. And in which case, if it were me, I'd be like, you know, I can't talk about that.
Maybe they all have the same story. I just, right. I'm thinking of it like Harry's going to have an undercover boss wig on and a fake mustache and be like, nice to meet you. My name's Bill Johnson.
No, honey, these are wizards. They have things like Polyjuice Potion, yeah, and Transfiguration spells.
That's another thing we found out, that they've got all the Polyjuice Potion. Hermione snagged it all.
There's also that. No, okay, big deal.
That's, anyway, I'm talking about things that don't matter.
It does matter, though, because you're bringing up a good point. I think you're not thinking about the protective charms totally correctly. Right, yeah.
I'm filling this thing out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know why this book, I feel like, is so dark?
Why?
Because as the last book, it's almost after dark.
Fox and the Foxhound. After dark.
So talk a little bit about the trio in, yeah, the bedroom discussing Mad-Eye's death and his missing body.
So first of all, it's a lot of luck that the three of them are able to reconvene in the first place, because Molly is doing her damnedest to keep the trio apart.
Yeah.
But she sends Harry out with Arthur to go like muck the chickens. I don't know what the fuck that means.
What?
It says muck the chickens. I don't know.
My version says feed the chickens.
Mine says muck the chickens. So clearly it means feed the chickens, I guess.
I need you to go outside and fuck the mickens. No. What? You want me to fuck the mickens?
Muck the chickens. Muck the chickens. That's what it says.
Weren't they mucking goats in another book? Now they're mucking chickens?
You're thinking, I mean, there is a mention of goats. I'll find it and I'll make sure that I'm not losing my mind. Anyway, muck the chicken. She sends Arthur out to do something with the chickens.
These three are about to smoke weed. That's what it felt like.
So, you know, they end up making their way to Ron's room covertly. If Molly knew, and she does, she would fucking lay an egg herself.
Yeah.
So the three of them start talking about Mad-Eye's death. Like you said, they're kind of going, well, maybe he survived. And Harry's like, I hate to burst your bubble, but there's no fucking way. And we get to this, like, nobody is surprised. Ron and Hermione are both like, here we go. This is the conversation we thought was going to happen. Harry's like, look, you know, you guys do not have to come with me. And they're like, okay. Yeah, this is, took you a little longer to bring this up than we thought it would, but we knew this was coming. And we find out the lengths that these two have gone to.
I can't.
To make this possible. Yeah. So Hermione, let's talk about Hermione.
Yeah.
And what
are the names? Do you remember the names?
Oh, I have to find them now.
So funny.
Wendell and Monica Wilkins.
What's funny about that is that I always call myself Calvin Wilkins.
Calvin
That's
Wilkins.
That's like my alias, Calvin Wilkins. Right. So the fact that she named them Wilkins.
Wilkins. Wendell and Monica Wilkins. So she modified her parents' memories to basically convince them they do not have a daughter and that their life stream has been to move to Australia.
Which they have done.
Which they have done. Going to hang out with Ben and Gerald in Australia. No memory or recollection of their daughter.
And she gets a little teary-eyed when she says that.
Of course she does. You know?
These are the lengths they go through for this kid.
Exactly.
They're true friends. These are homies. This is called ride or die.
Ride or die. And I'm so happy that she brought this up to him because this was kind of like, I feel like this was the ace up her sleeve because she was like, if he tries to pull this shit, then I'm going to tell him, okay, so did I just modify my parents' fucking memories
and send them
for
to Australia?
Right. Because
if they die, they won't even remember that they had a daughter before exactly. they die, before she can break the damn charm on them.
Exactly. She's basically like, look, if everything works out and everything goes well, then chances are I can reverse this magic and this spell and everything can be okay. And if I die, they will be none the wiser. They will never know that I existed. And she does this because she's told her parents a lot about Harry. And so they need to be torture proof, basically.
Yeah. And it's also, it protects them too.
Yeah, it really does.
Get them the hell out of here. Get them to Australia.
Exactly.
England to Australia. That's a pretty long drive.
It is.
Ask Ben.
It's definitely a long drive. So they're kind of hoping that, you know, when these three don't show up at school, some questions are going to start getting asked. So they're kind of hoping that it'll be assumed that Hermione has gone into hiding because a lot of Muggleborns are doing that. Maybe even left the country with her parents.
Yeah, there's a scare going on.
Yes. And then we get into Ron's plan B, which is what?
So this is where we get the ghost in the PJs.
The ghost in the PJs.
So this is so weird. This series is so strange. Ron's like, hey, got something else to show you, mate.
Yeah.
He's like, what's that? He's like, check this out. He's got a little hatch, like a pull down shitty attic, like what we have, you know? Yeah. He pulls it down. And he's like, come up here. Let me show you this fucking thing. And he's like, what you got up here, mate? I got a fucking gun up here. He's like, no, mate. It's not a gun, bro. It's a fucking ghoul, bro. It's a fucking ghoul, bro. So they go up into the attic and there's a ghoul. Now, we have not been presented with ghouls.
I think one was mentioned as being in Grimald Place, but yeah.
What do you think of when you think of a ghoul? This is like the Haunted Mansion at Disney. It's like ghouls and ghosts and ghosts and ghouls and goblins.
Right. Like, I think there's definitely a difference between a ghoul and a ghost.
Absolutely.
So
what do you think of as a ghoul?
I get the impression that a ghoul has a more corporeal form.
Right. Me too.
Like something you could put clothes on.
I feel like it's a ghost, like kind of like a ghost.
Yeah.
But it's more like a creature.
Yes.
It's almost like the demonic nature of it has given it kind of a body.
Okay.
You know, but I also think of it as being like mischievous, like
a poltergeist.
Like kind ghouls of. And goblins.
Do you know what I recently read what a poltergeist is specifically? And a poltergeist is a spirit that is not connected to a body that was once alive.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting? I don't remember where or why I read that. But technically that's what a poltergeist is.
You know what they
is.
Say, ghouls just want to have fun. I can't tell you how many Halloween decorations I saw this year that said that. Ghouls just want to have fun.
Well, my favorite is the sign that we found at the Dollar Tree, which was, oh my gourd, I love fall.
Yeah, that I bought for John.
Hey, John.
So the ghoul is like this creature.
Yeah.
Some kind of weird creature.
They keep calling it slimy. And
it's slimy and like it has pustules and stuff. But they've also kind of like fucked with this thing.
Right.
Which is weird. And this is before Fleur's parent shows up and Ron kicks a fucking gnome in the face.
Yeah.
So this is one of those weird creatures. Like, is it a boggart? Is it more like a house elf? Is it more like a ghost? It doesn't matter. It's fantasy and it's literature and it's fun.
It's also being used for something against its will, which is
so they've taken this like disgusting thing.
Yeah.
This is basically like if there was a zombie.
Right.
And you like dressed it up in my clothes and like parted its hair.
Brains.
And was like, what? It's Kevin.
Brains.
So they they dressed it up to look like Ron.
Right.
But it's like Ron with pustules and shit because ghouls are gross.
No.
Or have they made him sick?
They've made him look with the pustules. I mean, ghouls are gross,
yeah.
But they have covered him with pustules so that it's harder to tell that it's a ghoul. And the story is going to be that Ron has spattergrite, which is a totally fictitious, of course, disease.
So this will make them think anyone who's suspicious looking for Ron, Death Eaters or whatever, oh, we sense on our little giant marauder's map of the world or whatever that Ron is still in the burrow. Or they'll see him and think he's in the burrow or what?
This is designed for if anyone comes to the burrow looking for Ron. Like, physically comes to the burrow looking for Ron.
But because it's this super contagious disease,
they
won't want to get around him.
So they won't be able to get close enough to see that it's actually a ghoul.
He's upstairs sleeping. I mean, if you want to walk up and like look at him.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's a pretty good plan. It is not a plan that Molly knows anything about.
Arthur does.
You don't like the plan?
I don't like it.
You don't like it.
These little, they're loosey-goosey. There's too many people involved. There's too many cooks in the kitchen.
But what would you have them do? I mean, like,
I don't know the answer because I'm not a wizarding boy.
I think the alternative is Ron is just not at the burrow, which, you know, is problematic. And if you can convince even one person that Ron is at the burrow, and that word can spread through the Death Eater circles, I mean, that's kind of worth it. Because if they find out it's a ghoul and not actually Ron, then okay, well, Ron's not at the burrow.
He might be long gone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, what we have to do to enjoy the whole essence of this series is that you have to believe there's so much magic that you don't know about.
Right.
You have to believe that they're using the best magic that they are capable of for any given situation.
Absolutely.
You can't say, okay, well, Molly can bring all the glasses out and make the lemonade pour itself and then wash them. Why is she putting them back in the cabinet? Right. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
So anyway, that's what they've done. They've disguised this slimy zombie boy shit in the attic to look like Ron.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their little protection.
Yeah.
Hermione's done this protective thing on her parents. You know what this reminded me of? Oh, what? My God. I know you love the movie American President, right?
No, I've never seen it.
With, what?
Richard Gere?
No.
Fuck, who's in that movie?
Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas, yes.
It's Michael Douglas.
Uh-huh, and Annette Bening.
And Marty Sheen is his vice president, mm-hmm. right? But Marty Sheen, they were like college roommates. They've been friends like throughout their whole career.
Yeah.
And now his homeboy is president and he marks him as his VP, right? Taps him as a VP. So they're walking around the White House. Now, BT-dub, folks. The American President is a great movie. We love it. We love it because it's our fantasy
right.
dream of what, of how all that shit works.
Yeah.
West Wing, same thing.
Right.
It's our fantasy dream how all that works.
Yeah.
If you've read the news in the past, I don't know, 258 years, you'll find out that that's not exactly how the White House and the presidency works.
Definitely not.
Anyway, they're walking the grounds, like in the Rose Garden or something. They're walking. It's like, you know, into the night, some downtime. And Michael Douglas is the president. And they're just having a conversation. And Marty Sheen's like, well, Mr. President, you know, if we pass this bill, da 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 da. And Michael Douglas turns around and he goes, you know, whatever the guy's name is. He's like, you know, we've been friends for 20 years. You were my college roommate, for God's sake. When we're alone, you can call me Ken or whatever the president's first name is.
Right.
And Marty Sheen says, whatever you say, Mr. President, and turns around and walks away. And it's a moment in the film that it's like, this dude believes in Michael Douglas as the president. Like, he really believes in him as a friend. And I feel like that's what this scene is. Ron and Hermione going, you don't want us to go with you? Absolutely, Mr. President. We won't go with you.
Right. Yeah.
We're going with you.
Spoiler alert. We're going. I think that's a really cool parallel because Hermione even says this thing. She says, no, Harry, you listen. We're coming with you. That was decided months ago. Years, really. I think that line is so beautiful.
Yeah.
That was decided months ago. Years, really. She's like, we have been ride or die for a long time.
And we're going all the way with this.
Long before we knew about Horcruxes. Yeah.
We're not going to abandon you now.
Right. It's really beautiful.
So they start talking about where they're going to go first.
Yeah.
So Harry wants to go back to Godric's Hollow.
Mm-hmm.
This is where everything started.
Yeah.
This is where he was living with his parents,
yeah,
Lily and James, when Voldemort attacked them,
yeah,
and his mom got in the way. Harry survived the lightning bolt strike. His mom's ancient love magic. This is what set up everything.
Yeah.
The worst thing that Voldemort ever did was try to kill Harry Potter.
Right.
He created the very thing that would take him down, yeah, by that murderous act.
This is where he marked Harry as his equal, as it says in the prophecy.
The entire story.
Yes. Yeah.
And he says, I don't know why. I just have a feeling that's where I need to go back.
Yeah.
But damn, if this isn't like, now it's on. In the hero's story,
right,
when the hero returns to his homeland.
Oh, man.
Or goes to visit the grave of his father. Like,
right,
this is that moment. This is the moment where Mufasa goes out and talks to the ancestors.
Oh.
This is when Moana goes to the cave.
Yes.
And talks to her ancestors. This is when you go back and, yeah, you like, okay, let me go back, reground myself. I have a feeling that something's there.
Yeah.
Also, one thing I wanted to say about this is I love, absolutely love, that in this world of magic and uber fantasy make-believe,
mm-hmm,
that there's still room in this series for, I just have a feeling.
Yeah.
I have instinct. A gut instinct about this.
Yeah.
And how it ties in with Dumbledore's whole notion of, it's the choices you make.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's about, like, so much of this series is about navigating your emotions and about, yeah, navigating emotions in general, which is what our lives are, which is what makes good literature, is to be a reflection of our lives.
That's so true.
But I love that it's a hunch. That, yeah, everything doesn't have to be. Now, I'm sure we're going to find out why Harry had that hunch, but gut feelings and intuitions and suspicions and guesses that are wrong and guesses that are right, that really is what creates the texture of the series.
I also think it's interesting that Harry would have never been listening to instinct a couple years ago, even. You know, it almost seems like that's something that he's developed a skill for as he's entering adulthood, which he's going to be doing in 3-4 days.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, one of the defining characteristics of him growing up is the fact that he's listening to his gut. Sometimes, yeah, not all the time. We can't follow our instincts everywhere. But knowing and discerning when instincts are important and when they're not is a really cool trait of becoming wiser.
Maybe. Yeah, and maturing.
Yeah.
He also has gone from, let me at him. Like,
yeah,
this little scrappy dog that's, yeah, so emotional, he wants to go mess somebody up. He's calculating now.
Yeah.
He is anxious. Like, we got to get to this wedding, get the fuck out of here. Like, I got this thing I got to do. But he's like, I'm ready. This is like, I don't know how much boxing you've ever watched.
Not a lot.
Boxing is very fun to watch. But you'll see boxers, and some boxers are just like pacing. You know, like an animal in a cage, and they're just like shadow boxing. They're just fucking, get me in the ring. I'm going to eat this motherfucker alive.
Yeah.
And then you'll see the other boxer, and he's completely calm and stoic, and his head is high. And he's just rolling his neck around, kind of stretching out. And you're like, oh, this dude's not messing around.
This guy.
And I feel like, yeah, that's what Harry is right now.
Yeah.
He's the dude that's like, let's go.
Yeah.
Go back to my homeland. I'm going to visit my parents, and I'm going to fight that devil.
Which is all well and good, except Hermione's like, I don't think it's a great idea. I don't think we should go to Godric's Hollow. She's like, doesn't it kind of seem like that would be the perfect, like, don't you think Voldemort might be keeping an eye out on
Godric's
Hollow?
It's like going back to Privet Drive. It's like going back to, right, Hogwarts.
That's the point Hermione's making.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little, it's
obvious.
It's kind of the point you were making about the Burrow, even though I think the Burrow doesn't really fit into that because there are so many protective charms.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, yeah, where's the first place that you're going to look? It may not be the first place, Godric's Hollow, but it's probably in the top five that Voldemort thinks he's going to go.
I still feel like he's going to go there.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I know that you know and you can't tell me. But
right.
I like to believe that he's going to go there.
Right. Right, right, right. Well, and I feel like Hermione's not saying we should never go to Godric's Hollow. I feel like she's just saying that shouldn't be our next stop.
Yeah.
Right? You know? And I love that she's being very diplomatic. She's like, I totally understand why you want to go there. I get it. I just think it's really risky, yeah, to go there from here.
So then they start talking about our boy, Rob.
Broccoli Rob.
Broccoli Rob. Because that's it. That's his name.
Even though it's R-A-B-E, Broccoli Rob.
So Broccoli Rob is the guy who left a note inside the locket.
Right.
And it said, knock, knock. Who's there? Fake locket. Go fuck yourself.
Knock, knock. Who's there? I stole your Horcrux. Fuck you.
Yeah. Basically, the note said, hey, I've stolen the real Horcrux. Yeah. This is not the actual locket. This right. here is a fake locket. I got it at the Dollar Tree. Or at the, what is it called in England that we figured out?
Oh, the penny Poundland.
Poundland. Yeah.
Which, Poundland. Yeah. Bow chicka bow wow. Fox and the Foxhound after dark.
Welcome to Poundland. Hey, Fox, where did you get that hound? Picked him up at the Pound.
Poundland.
Okay. So Broccoli Rob and the Poundland Horcrux locket. Ooh. And so Hermione starts talking about, well, how are we going to find this joint?
Yeah.
How do we even find the real one?
Right.
Which is a good question. It's like, well, we don't even know who Broccoli Rob really is.
Right. Exactly. Well, and Ron is like, and bless his heart, Ron's like, maybe Broccoli Rob destroyed it. Like, maybe it's gone already. Yeah. And Hermione's
cheddar
like,
cheese.
Jesus Christ. This is really going off the rails. Hermione's like, okay, that's a cute thought, Ron, but we would still have to confirm that. We would still have to know that it was destroyed.
Yeah.
Because we would have no way of knowing if it is or if it isn't. And this is, the Horcruxes are kind of an all or nothing thing, bruh.
Sometimes Ron is so dumb.
I know.
Ron's like, one less Horcrux.
Yay, two Christmases.
He's like, yay, one less Horcrux. Then we only got to find five. Look at the math genius this one is.
Bless his little heart.
So then Hermione reveals that she has been doing a bit of light reading.
Like very light reading. Yeah, with her book that reminds her of rotting flesh, or at least that's how she seems to treat it. So remember how in the Hogwarts library, there were no books about Horcruxes because Dumbledore had them removed. Hermione had the brilliant idea shortly after Dumbledore died to just be like, Accio Horcrux books.
And they just came flying through the window.
Yeah.
If that would have worked, I would have said, Accio Dumbledore's wallet.
Accio 1 million pounds.
Accio Dumbledore's iPhone.
I'm going to Poundland, bitches.
Imagine you stole Grandpa Wizard Man's wallet and took that shit to Poundland. My God, this dude crossed the Rainbow Bridge and you gotta spend his ducats at Poundland? Stop
it. I don't think Poundland takes canuts and galleons and shit.
Do you think that if we flew to the UK and we brought Dumbledore's wallet, and we took Natalia Ward to Cheeky Nando's, do you think she would be like, this is delicious. Thanks, Gramps.
Yes, I think she would. I think she would. I think she would be into it. Let's do it. That's the plan. Poundland and Cheeky Nando's on Gramps. Let's go. Oh my God.
I'm going to make a shirt for one marauder. I'm not going to say who. That's going to say, I spent Grandpa's money at Poundland.
Grandpa Wizard's money.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Let's
get out of Poundland and
let's talk about the things that Hermione read in this book.
Yeah. So she has multiple books, but the one you're talking about is like, it's evil. Like the book itself is evil.
Yeah.
She doesn't even like to touch this thing. And here we get some absolutely terrific. This is Horcrux 101.
Yes. This Take is like, me to Horcrux 101.
This is like if you went to the community college.
Yep.
And I don't know what it's called in the UK. Probably like Little Publix or something.
Like the grocery store Publix? Little Publix.
Well, imagine a little Publix.
A little tiny Publix. So cute.
A little deli and everything.
I'm going to pee my pants.
So here's some of the things we learned about Horcruxes, finally.
Yeah.
Right? We know to create a Horcrux, you have to kill someone.
Yeah.
And that killing of someone and creating a Horcrux, which means a piece of your soul, it shatters your soul into parts, right? You've basically divided your soul up.
Yeah.
And it fucks you up. And that's why Voldemort, who was a human named Tom Riddle,
yeah,
that's why he looks like this snake guy now, because he's been pieced back together. You know, his shattered soul is kind of messed up. Well, the Horcruxes are all scattered. If he can get his soul back, then he'll be super powerful. And in my opinion, probably like reassume the form of Tom Riddle. Maybe that's a whole different conversation.
Oh, yeah, that is, you know, maybe.
So the only way that you can truly repair yourself if you've created a Horcrux and a piece of your soul is shattered is by feeling remorse.
Right.
So really, even if Voldemort, like, Harry wants to destroy all the Horcruxes because it will destroy Voldemort, right? Because his soul is in these shattered pieces.
It would make him completely mortal and, yeah.
If Voldemort wanted to repair his own soul,
right,
he would have to feel remorse.
For each and every murder.
Thing that he did.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a super important thing, I feel like.
That is a big ask.
It's super hard to destroy Horcruxes.
Yes.
So we start talking about the only Horcrux that we know for a fact has been destroyed and we've seen destroyed. And that was Tom Riddle's diary.
Yes.
That possessed Jenny.
Yep.
That Harry Potter killed in the cave with a basilisk tooth.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
All right. So Harry's kind of like, yeah, okay, so I got to stab every Horcrux with a basilisk tooth?
We don't have any basilisk things. That's what it is.
And she's like, well, look. The reason that the basilisk thing worked is because there's only one anecdote in the world for it, and it's super rare, and it's phoenix tears.
Right.
So, yeah, if you would have stabbed it with a dinner fork,
right,
probably you wouldn't have killed it.
Well, it's also the fact that basilisk venom is not only does it only have the one antidote, but it's also really destructive. It's like totally fatal.
It's like the most poisonous thing in the world.
Super duper poisonous. Yeah. And the Horcrux cannot repair itself because the Horcrux has the ability to repair damage done to it.
You have to put it, as Hermione puts it, beyond magical repair.
That's the big key. Yeah. Beyond magical repair.
So she makes this analogy with Ron. She's like, if I take a sword and I stab it through your chest right now, you will die.
I love that that's the metaphor she used.
I won't kill your soul.
Right.
But I will kill your body.
Right.
She's like, the Horcruxes are kind of like a flip.
Yeah.
So that fragment of soul, it can't exist without that physical body.
Yes.
Now, the spiritual beliefs of humans and kind of what she's referencing is every human has a soul and it's something that's bigger and higher than your body.
Right.
And it doesn't have the same mortality. So, yeah. You die, your physical body dies, and your soul goes to heaven, or your soul goes whatever you believe, if you believe in souls.
Yeah.
But the fragment of the soul can't exist without the physical item.
Right.
So that piece of Voldemort's soul that was in Tom Riddle's diary, it's not coming back.
Right. It's gone.
That's super important.
Destroyed the item.
That's super important because we're like, oh, now it makes sense why the Horcruxes have to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Because let's say that even if you this is something crazy to think about. Let's say you destroyed four.
Right.
And there were three left.
Yeah.
Even if he felt remorse about all seven of them, he's only getting those three pieces of his soul.
It's a really interesting point.
So he will be like, he's messed himself up for life, even if he does feel remorse, as long as they're destroyed.
Not to mention the fact that Hermione says when she's talking about the remorse that it's written in the book that sometimes the pain of that reckoning is enough to kill the person. And she's saying this in the context of one Horcrux.
Yeah.
Much less six, you know, like Jesus.
Do you ever think that maybe Voldemort would be a little bit more powerful right now if Harry had not destroyed the diary?
So that's a really interesting question. I mean, I would think so, right? Because it is still a piece of his soul. And there is a question that, and unfortunately, sometimes I mix up the movies and the books. I think that this is handled differently in the books and movies, but it's a very common question of, does he know? Like, did he feel it?
Did he feel the pain?
Because remember, Dumbledore also destroyed a Horcrux, the ring. That one's gone too.
That's right.
Yeah. That Horcrux is gone. We don't know how he did it.
And maybe the locket at this point.
And maybe the locket. We don't know.
Yeah.
But the question of, does he feel it? Does he know? That's a big question mark for you.
I would also be wondering, has Broccoli Rob destroyed other Horcruxes?
Right. So if he knew about the existence of this one, did he make it as far as the trio has gone with their logic and deductions, and as far as Dumbledore went to deduce that he made more than one?
So this is not my prophecy, but I do want to say that, like, I feel like who Broccoli Rob really is, I'm going to be like, oh, come on. It was Charlie Weasley the whole time or something like
Charlie,
that. You
know? Charlie, it's,
Charlie is coming for the wedding.
Charlie is coming for, I did hear, and he's sharing a room with Bill. Yeah,
yeah,
he is.
So a Horcrux can attach itself to a person.
Yeah.
And the diary did that to Jenny. But there's an important rule there. If you get too emotionally attached to the item, it can possess you.
Yeah.
So the reason that the diary was able to possess Jenny is because Jenny started pouring all her thoughts and feelings and insecurities, like truly like a diary, into this book. And that's how it was like, I'll attach myself to you.
Yeah.
Now, this is really crazy. When you start thinking about the mechanics and the symbolism and everything of the series,
right,
how freaking brilliant it is, that an evil person, by committing a heinous crime,
yeah,
would shatter their soul into pieces.
Yeah.
And those pieces would go into a physical object.
Right.
And that physical object that has that fractured evil soul in it could then play on and manipulate and take advantage of the emotions of a person.
Right. Right. I mean,
the fingers that are coming out now of all of the magic is super freaking cool.
It's really interesting. And I, the way that Hermione describes it, where she says that it can sort of flit back and forth, it just sounds like this. Like, I think about, I think it's Spider-Man 3, where it's like the black goo is like, I don't remember what it is, but it's like evil Spider-Man. But it, like, the way it crawls and attaches to things, yeah, that's kind of the imagery that I have.
Like, it almost has its own little life to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the quote that she says is, you're in trouble if you get too fond of or dependent on the Horcrux.
Right.
Now, this is kind of crazy because this makes you think about, symbolism-wise, our attachment to physical items.
Yeah.
It also says something about dependency.
Yeah.
It says something about emotional dependence on other people. It
codependency.
Says a lot about codependency, about manipulation, about letting yourself into a toxic situation without knowing it because you left yourself emotionally vulnerable, which kind of is a reflection also of the Dementors and how they work.
Right.
I'm digging this Harry Potter thing. Mrs. Weasley comes in and is like, whoa, 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 whoa. And she says, I'm sorry I ruined your Black Panther party. She's like, oh, you could go fucking fold napkins and you can do this. Actually, that's not what she says. She's not happy that,
they're meeting
because she knows. She knows that they know she's been trying to keep them separated.
And they're plotting, but also she's like, I'm so glad that you all have been enjoying your rest. I know you need it. But she's basically like, do you have any idea how much shit needs to be done around this house? Like,
and she puts them on presence duty.
And as people who have planned a wedding before, I think we know this feeling a little bit. You know, it's like, I mean, the sheer volume of shit that has to be done, even if you don't care, even if you say, I don't care, make the decision for me. The sheer volume of shit that still has to get done.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. The Delacours arrive.
So the Delacours arrive, yes.
Yes. And they're very helpful and very pleasant. And
judgy, this whole judgy ass group that was like, oh, I can't wait till these nightmares come in.
I know.
Guess who is quite helpful and pleasant and really polite?
I feel like this is how we felt about everyone who knew we were going to Paris for our honeymoon. And they're like, oh, well, the French are so rude. And we came back and we were like, everyone was freaking lovely.
They're amazing.
Actually. Yeah, they were lovely to us. Thank you very much. Ugh. So they're very helpful, very pleasant, very gracious, you know, like, oh, I feel like they say exactly the right things. Like, you know, Fleur tells us you have been working so hard for this wedding. Like, For us, that's so nice.
Instead of
like,
help.
We can't wait to help. And I feel like they could have, I'm glad they're written this way, because they could have showed up and said virtually the same things, but with a passive aggressive twist. It could have been like, oh, isn't this cute? You know, and they're not that way. And I love that because it just continues to show how much Molly misunderstood Fleur in the last book.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe Mrs. Delacour and Molly could be good friends.
I think so, too. They're really different people.
Yeah.
But
they're like my mom and your mom.
Exactly. They're really different, but like their kids are in love. You know? Yeah. It's like adorable.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. And then the kind of the last thing that happens is that Molly brings up it's Harry's birthday. It's about to be Harry's birthday. Not only is it the wedding, but also his birthday. And he's like, please don't make a fuss. Like, please, I don't, just dinner is fine. And Molly kind of takes him up on that. She's like, all right, well, just dinner, but I'll invite Remus. I'll invite Tonks. I'll invite like all your folks, your people. And we'll just have a low key dinner. And Harry's like, good. So we'll have that coming up. And that's essentially where the chapter ends.
Let me ask you this. Is Harry going to be in better shape when he turns 18? Because that underage magic trace is going to be off of him.
17.
Or when he turns 17, I mean?
Well, in the sense that the ministry won't be able to tell literally exactly where he is all the time.
He can magic wherever the hell he wants now. Right?
Right, exactly. So he's no longer underage. He's the youngest of Ron and Hermione and him. He's the youngest of the trio. So the other two already don't have a trace anymore.
That's a good point. Now all three of them are untraceable.
Exactly. So, I mean, are they unable to be found? No, but you don't have this super easy way to find him anymore. So in that sense, he will be in way better shape. Yeah. So what is your prophecy?
I don't think the wedding's going to go well.
Oh.
I think something bad's going to happen at the wedding.
Oh, I hate that.
I think like someone's going to slip in through the port key that's disguised as someone else, or Mundungus is going to come back or something.
You are like, you have it out for Mundungus.
I'm so worried about this wedding.
Okay. Okay. You have a very worried expression.
I don't like it.
You have a lot of anxiety about this wedding. I do. Oh my goodness. Well, we shall see. What is your wedding planning hustle and bustle, Hedwig's Digital Get Down Hoot?
Hoo hooty hoo hoo hoo. After dark.
After dark.
More like wedding night.
After dark. After dark. So we kind of have a twofold question. I'm pairing two questions that we got from two different people because they're very congruent. Mm. So the first one was sent in by Wild Blue Raven, our Marauder patron. And I don't know that we have an answer for this question, but Whoa. It's still interesting. So she said, do you think you'll start doing parenting lessons as well, or instead of marriage lessons, now that you're becoming parents?
I've had so many friends ask me this.
Really?
Question. Yeah.
And I don't think that we know.
This past weekend, a friend asked me this. I've always said, we don't know shit about parenting.
Right.
But we don't know shit about marriage either. We give marriage lessons.
We're figuring that out.
We started a podcast about marriage before we got married.
Right. Right.
It's a little confident.
I mean.
And we still don't know what the fuck we're doing.
I think we do. I think we. We're doing it. We're figuring it out day by day.
That's exactly what we're going to do with parenting, too.
I think so, too.
Keep
so,
moving, keep laughing, and figure it out.
I mean, even though we don't have like an exact answer for that, I can tell you, I think that I speak for both of us when I say we love the idea. And I don't know that we have any compelling reasons not to do it. I think it's just a matter of like when we would start incorporating that. Is that something that we would do? Like, do we finish the series and then start the series over with parenting lessons? I don't know.
The Foxies will let us know.
The Foxies will let us know. But just know that it's something that we are thinking of for sure. And something that we're really like amenable to.
And it's going to take a while to get through this book. We've had a lot of one chapter episodes. They're pretty dense.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to be here for the journey.
Exactly.
And we're probably not going to take like a month off or anything like that. Because no.
We got to keep plowing on.
We're dedicated. So you're going to have some very strange episodes.
With baby crying in the background.
Definitely. We're going to lose like all of our listeners overnight.
I think it's just going to take us a little longer to do each episode, probably.
You know what we'll have to do is we need to start fake recording to test the baby of like when she's going to be awake and when she's going to be asleep.
That's a good
idea. Okay, so she's been asleep for an hour. Mm-hmm. Let's go talk in the living room in a normal voice to see if it wakes her up.
Right.
We'll have to test her.
We'll have to test her. And also, it probably would be a good time for us to start recording right after when we start having a good sense of that, when we're both on leave, too, where we can do like 2 to 3 episodes a week, lay it down, you know, so that when we're even more tired. I don't know. We'll figure that out. The second question came from Mary, and it's also about parenting. And that's why I wanted to pair it with Wild Blue Ravens. So Mary said, as you're becoming parents for the first time, are there any adults in the wizarding world that represent what you think your parenting styles will be? They can be actual parents like Arthur or Molly or other adults in the series like Dumbledore or Sirius.
Whoa.
I love this question. What do you think?
Oh, man, I'm afraid to say anything.
I really like Arthur's parenting, honestly.
Yeah, I say that's a really good one.
I think that he's like, I always think of that moment when Molly's like, your sons took that enchanted car of yours to Surrey. And he's like, how did it go? You know, I always like, to me, that's the defining Arthur moment. He's very jovial. He always pretty much always has a sense of humor.
I think that I'm going to say, what I think I'm going to be like as a parent is I think I'm going to be a little bit Hagrid.
Oh, yeah.
Because one thing I like about Hagrid is not afraid to show and demonstrate his emotions in front of other people.
Absolutely.
He's cried in front of the kids.
Absolutely.
Like Aragog's funeral, you know, thinking that he lost Buckbeak.
Yeah.
All of these things. He's always been very vulnerable and open to his children and not afraid to let kids see him cry. He's been very honest about his emotions, but he's also fun.
Absolutely.
And he's adventurous and he cares about living creatures and other animals that aren't humans.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I'm going to try to instill in our kid.
I really love that. I think that's great.
And I'm also, there's probably going to be a lot of times where I say, I shouldn't have told you
that. I shouldn't have told you that. You know, I think that everyone's head probably goes to Molly when you think of a parent. And it's not that I don't like Molly's parenting style. She has 7 effing children. You know, I mean, the woman is spread thin. And I think she is an amazing parent despite that. You know, like in spite of the circumstances, she's an amazing parent. But to me, sometimes I think Molly just kind of is painted as, or maybe she's just written as, the very kind of tropey disciplinary mother, you know, the tired, worn out, put upon, can't you just pick up after yourselves kind of mother.
Yeah.
And I get that role, but that's not the role I want to have. I don't want to just be the person who's doing the chores, but like, I want to be part of the kid's life. I want to be part of those conversations. And I feel like Molly doesn't always have an opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's weird when your kids go away to high school.
Right.
Or away for half of middle school and all of high school and like your first year of university, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Like normally, unless your kid goes to a boarding school, at least where we live, like your kids generally live in the house with you
until they go off to college, if they even do that right after high school. So, I mean, what a cool question, though.
Great pairing of questions.
Absolutely. Too. It's time for marriage lessons, and I believe I am up first this week.
I believe you are.
You would say that regardless.
I absolutely would.
My marriage lesson comes from a moment that I did highlight, I really liked, but I didn't talk about it too much. And it is at the very beginning of the chapter, and it's when Molly is like, so I hear that you're dropping out of school. Ron and Hermione seem to think that the three of you are dropping out of Hogwarts, she began in a light, casual tone. Oh, said Harry. Well, yeah, we are. And I just really like this moment because he doesn't beat around the bush. He doesn't try to necessarily like soften the message. So my marriage lesson is speak directly, don't play games.
Right.
In this moment, Harry just needs to say, yes, you heard correctly. That is exactly what we're doing. And he doesn't say it with any emotional charge behind it.
Right.
It's just a statement of fact. And I just like that. There's something about it I really like. Don't play games.
Yeah.
Just say it.
I don't have time for these reindeer games.
Right, exactly. What's your marriage lesson?
So my marriage lesson has to do with what we were talking about with the wedding being planned.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, Molly's obsessed with this wedding going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry and the Golden Trio, they're sort of thinking about the future and what's going on. Molly's obsessing about the future and them being in danger.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking about, no one's like in the moment.
Right.
So mine is appreciate the moments with your family that you have.
Oh, yeah.
And suck it up and don't be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I felt like this was really the case when we had our big cookout with our family up at Jordan Lake recently.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone was just in that time and in that day.
Definitely.
No one was thinking about the past. They weren't thinking, we were thinking about the past a little bit, but it was like no one was really thinking about the future. Everyone was just there in the moment.
Yeah.
And like our wedding, we will never have all of those people together. Right. Not all of those people are even alive anymore.
Exactly.
But we'll never have all those people in one place ever again.
Right.
And I remember all night just being like,
yeah,
just soak it up, soak it up, soak it up. This is so temporary. This yeah. will only last for hours and you'll remember it for the rest of your life.
It still is the best advice about the wedding I ever got was, yeah, take mental snapshots throughout the day.
Now, I cannot tell you one conversation I had that night.
Yeah.
If you told me I took a picture or did take a picture with someone, I don't know.
So because overwhelming.
Of my nerves.
Yeah.
But the feeling and the emotion, the air that night,
yeah,
what it smelled like, what it sounded like is in my brain for the rest of my life. Like
definitely.
It's firmly locked in.
Definitely.
So appreciate the moments you have with the people that you love.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Ready to roll the credits?
I heard they're good ones.
My friends, I would like to take a minute before winners and losers and Marauder shoutouts to let you know how you can engage with us outside of the podcast universe. Check out our website, thefoxandthefoxhound.com, for show notes, past marriage lessons and prophecies, and direct links to our socials, including the link to join us in Discord. You can also leave us a voicemail directly through the website or send us a written question there as well. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok using @thefoxandthefoxhound and on Twitter using @foxandfoxhound. If you love this show and want to be a part of its production, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thefoxandthefoxhound. There are 5 membership tiers to choose from, and the funds go directly to us, allowing us to bring you this show ad-free. Our patrons truly make this show happen. You can also show us some love by telling your Potterhead friends about us, engaging with us on social media, and rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts. Finally, we want to send a huge thank you to 2 special people. First is Judson Hurd, who composed the original music for our show, and whose music you can find on Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you go to find new artists. His last name is spelled H-U-R-D. And second, our fantastic, brilliant, and all-around wonderful manager of mischief, Josh Bailey. Be sure to check out Casting Roles. That's R-O-L-E-S, where you'll find Josh as DM of an ongoing D&D campaign. You can find them at youtube.com/castingroles. Again, that's R-O-L-E-S. And on Twitter using @castingroles. Let's get back to the episode.
Okay, excellent credits, as always. It's time for winners and losers. Who is your winner?
I'm giving it to Molly Weasley.
Oh, why are you giving it to Molly?
Because of everything that she's doing for this wedding is super sweet. And because she's trying to protect everyone, she's trying to look out for everyone. Yeah, she's snapping at the kids, but she is being a really good mom, and I really admire her.
I think that's really nice. My winner, I give it to Hermione Granger. She's super prepared. She's been researching this whole time. She's going through her books. She's packing. Like, these, let's face it, these boys would not be ready for jack shit without her.
These boys would be dead without
her. They would also just be dead without her. So for being super prepared, but also for just doing something really difficult to protect her parents, something that probably ripped her heart out of her chest, but she did it to protect them. And that's selfless. That's beautiful.
Ride or die, Herms.
Right? Who's your loser?
Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
The three of them?
I'm giving the loser to the trio.
Why?
Because as much as I admire them,
yeah,
as much as I can't wait for these three to go out and kick the devil's ass,
yeah,
I really think they should be a little bit more focused on what's going on,
you know, okay,
at the house. They need to, you know, not be so begrudging about helping Molly out.
That's a hot take.
They're being a little bratty. They're being a little bratty.
That's a hot take. It's been a long time since this happened. My loser is Molly.
I knew it.
I find myself this entire chapter just wishing Molly would say what she wants to say. It kind of ties into my marriage lesson.
Yeah.
Like, don't give people bullshit tasks. Tell them, I am uncomfortable with the three of you being in the same room because I'm worried about you and I'm worried that you're making this plan.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Save me some stress and just do separate things. Instead, she assigns them these bullshit tasks. I don't think that you think, and I know that you know that I don't know. It's like, it's just, come on. Just say what you want to say.
She's a winner and a loser.
And I gave it to Hermione and you gave loser to the trio.
Isn't it a testament to how well these characters are written?
Yeah.
That two people that are both enjoying the same series can funnel it through our own human emotions in different
ways. Absolutely.
That makes the character so human to me.
Definitely. We had like really opposite views throughout this chapter, but we both enjoyed the chapter and I think we both took the right things out of it. That's so cool. It's time for Patronus moments.
Oh, la 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 la, Patronus.
What is your Patronus moment?
My Patronus moment.
After dark. My
Patronus moments after dark. What a weird shape your Patronus has. It's a honey badger. So am I going first with Patronuses?
Yeah, I'm making that call.
Patroni.
I always think Patronuses.
Okay. So I had a great weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I went up, saw some of my best buds in the world.
Yep.
We went to a tiny little town, a little quaint little town where all of them kind of live near in the Triangle area of North Carolina. And there was a ton of Patronus moments. I could have written down, the whole weekend was a Patronus moment.
Yeah.
And one of them, so I could have put as my Patronus moment, like, this big dinner that we ate, or us hiking and going to this overlook, which is really beautiful. Now, it was a toss-up for me between two Patronus moments.
Okay.
One was hiking because I haven't been able to hike in almost a year because of my ankle.
Right.
And I was able to hike, like, not a long distance, maybe a mile and a half. But this was like up steep, rocky terrain, like things where I'm afraid I'm going to twist my ankle. And I did it. And that was cool.
Yeah.
But my true Patronus moment, the one that felt magical to me and filled my heart up, was last night after we had this huge dinner. We went for a walk. Like, we were all getting kind of sleepy and it wasn't really that late and it was really brisk and cold outside. Let's go for a walk. So we all put our little hats and scarves on and stuff.
Cute.
And we went for a walk around this neighborhood. And this neighborhood is like a nicer neighborhood. Like, these are pretty expensive homes, but it's really dark. There's not a lot of street lights. It's a very quiet town. And we just went for this walk, and it was me and three of my buds. And some of us were smoking cigars.
Yeah.
And we just went on this like chilly walk. And just to be like walking in like the moonlight on this windy, beautiful fall night with my homies.
Yeah.
And thinking about how these four people for 20 years have like walked, you know, as this group. And I was looking in front of, you know, I love shadows and light and stuff.
Yeah.
And at one point, the lights that were coming from the landscaping of this house had lit up, and I looked down and it was our four shadows.
Oh,
I could see our four shadows all walking together. And I was just thinking, like, I'm so happy to have these people in my life and to be with my friends right now on this brisk walk, walking down the street like we used to do back when we used to hit the bars back in the day.
I love that.
And it was just a really nice time. And I did at that moment, I breathed in the air and I was like, remember this moment. Like, yeah. Remember right now how you're feeling and how happy you are. So, because you might need it later.
That's beautiful. I think that's really nice. Like, that's what I mean by mental snapshots.
Yes.
It's that kind of thing. Yes. It's that literal, like, image that you're looking at. So my Patronus moment, and I'm, you know, I won't take it personally that you didn't choose the same one, is we had our anatomy scan.
Oh, yeah, our baby.
We, you know, the hour-long ultrasound of our baby.
How does that feel like 2 weeks ago?
The first time that we've seen our child since 9 weeks.
But what about smoking cigars with my friends? What baby?
There's, you and I both agreed that ultrasound technology is like, God bless people who can read an ultrasound and know what they're looking at. We were lost.
It looks like somebody put bubble gum on their phone camera and kept moving it around. And they're like, oh, do you see the kidney? No, I see the same shit that you showed me just exactly. Now. It doesn't look like anything.
So it's understandable that this isn't your Patronus moment. But the reason why it was my Patronus moment is because even though I have to go back in a month because they didn't get all the images they need because she was really uncooperative.
Yes.
My Patronus moment is that what they could see, everything looks great and totally normal. And I feel like we got a little glimpse at her personality because
she's a mover and a shaker.
She was like leapfrogging from one side of my uterus to the other.
And she kept sticking her little butt in the air.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I felt like we met her for the first time.
Exactly.
I was like, oh girl.
Oh,
is this how you are?
Yeah.
Are you a wild one? Are you like Charlie, our cat?
I think she seems a little wild and she seems a little independent because she did not seem to enjoy being poked with that wand. Like she was like almost running away.
That was such a beautiful moment.
It was a really cool day. And so we'll have another one at the end of this month to complete those pictures. And then in our third trimester, because there's a very minor, nobody needs to worry, but there's a very minor issue that just calls for a little bit of continuous monitoring for her growth. Yeah. We'll get like super frequent ultrasounds in the third trimester.
I'm super happy about
that. I'm low key happy about that.
Now, money wise, I'm not, but if I could have requested more ultrasounds.
But I think that's all covered
by our plan. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's all covered as like part of, you know, their global kind of, they're like, you pay us for your prenatal care. And this is, you know, part of prenatal care. But I am low key excited that we'll get like, I think she said like even every week ultrasounds, like every couple weeks or every week. That's going
to
be cool.
Now, what was really weird for me is when we were walking across the street, we're in one building. They send you to the other building for the ultrasound.
Yeah.
And we're walking across the street. I have driven down that street 10,000 times. Like, this is a street. It's a path that I've taken. It's a cool cut through in our town. And it's a cut through that I learned from my mom as a kid. Like, I've taken this road since I was born, like since I was a little kid. I've just never noticed.
Right.
Those doctor's offices, I know they're there, but they mean nothing to me.
Totally nondescript.
And like, I don't think I've ever walked across that road. And I was like, wow, this is like the same old road, but with this giant new memory.
Yeah.
And another thing that I thought, I was like, I'm so happy that we're doing this together. I'm so happy that like we are two people who are in love.
Yes.
And this is our baby experience.
And that we both have jobs that are flexible enough that we can both
be there. Yeah, I felt really blessed and very grateful and very lucky on that day.
I mean, we both took the whole day off and that was really nice. You know, that was a lot of gratitude in that. Cause I mean, I can get very frustrated, especially with our healthcare system in the United States whenever I have anything medical going on. But this whole pregnancy thing has really brought it into sharp focus. And so sometimes I can just be like, oh my God, everything sucks, you know? And then I have to remind myself, it really doesn't though. That part of it really sucks. And that part of it is very broken in our country. But there are a lot of things to be super grateful for that are the state of our relationship and the fact yeah. that we have flexible enough schedules that we can do this. Like, and we're doing okay.
I'm also grateful to the doctors and nurses that let me be a part of things.
Of course.
You know, that let me. And now COVID restrictions aren't as bad as they were. So they are yeah. like, okay, you wait outside. We'll text you when it's time to come in.
Exactly.
Like, you don't need to be hanging around the lobby. It's not your appointment.
Right. Like, right. You know, just to COVID reduce.
Everybody.
Yeah. Just to reduce the number
coughing
of people.
And I like to cough and sneeze a lot in public.
He does.
No mask on.
And he doesn't cover his mouth right. or anything. Yeah. Yeah.
but I've been really grateful that like the doctor talked to you and talked to me. And yes. I'm also grateful that you want me to be a part
I really
of
do.
These yes. appointments and things, because it's like that's your choice.
Yeah.
If you did not want me in those appointments and you're like, hey, this is kind of like my own thing, you could do that.
Sure.
And it'd be nothing wrong with it.
You're so right though. That doctor we talked to was very good about making sure she was making eye contact with both of us. She was addressing both of our questions. Yeah. She was making us feel like a unit. Yeah, of course I want you there. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah.
She's going to be a wild one, folks.
She's going to be wild. Yes. Yeah. Well, let's shout out our marauders. And there was so much mention of like vol-au-vent and like canapes and like little.
What are vol-au-vents and canapes? Are you just making up words?
No. Harry says the thing to Ginny about, hang on. Let me find it. Ginny tells her, I think Mom thinks that if she can stop the three of you getting together and planning, she'll be able to delay you leaving, Ginny told Harry in an undertone as they laid the table for dinner on the third night of his stay. And then what does she think's going to happen? Harry muttered. Someone else might kill off Voldemort while she's holding us here making vol-au-vent. Vol-au-vent are little, they're like little puff pastry things, and then they have stuff in the middle.
Oh, that's a little treat.
It's a little like hors d'oeuvre.
It's a nice bag.
You know I'm an hors d'oeuvre fan.
Yeah.
So for the Marauder shoutouts, I want to know, what is their favorite party food? If they're at a wedding or if they're at an event that has like hors d'oeuvres, what's their go-to thing?
Okay.
Yeah. Let's kick it off with Wild Blue Raven.
I think she likes a chocolate fountain.
Ooh, who doesn't?
Remember when Golden Corral had, I heard they had chocolate fountains.
That's not the chocolate
and
fountain
said
I want.
That there was like little pieces of chicken and
yeah,
stuff.
Fuck that shit. No, yeah. Fuck that shit.
I don't want to talk about it. It makes me gag.
She would want a sanitary chocolate fountain. How about Flavia Diaz?
I think she likes pigs in a blanket.
Oh, God.
If she eats meat. If she doesn't eat meat, maybe she likes vegetarian pigs in a blanket.
Yeah, because they do make
vegetarian. And pigs in a blanket is something called Lil Smokies, made by Oscar Mayer, I want to say.
Lil Smokies, yeah.
They're like little smoked sausages. And then you make rolls, right? Like dinner rolls.
Right. Or it's like puff pastry around it.
Squish yeah. the dinner roll around the little wiener. And it's like a little fat little, it's like a little hot dog, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a piggy in a blanket. I don't know yeah. if this is what the English call sausage rolls or if those are two different things. I don't know if maybe the English call them pigs in a blanket. Or, I don't think so. Yeah. That sounds incredibly American to me. Pigs yeah. in a blanket. America. But I love a pig in a blanket.
Now this right, call me crazy. I was thinking about taking one of them little sausages and stuffing it in a dinner roll, much like a hot dog, much like the famed hot dog, right? And then I sat there up all night thinking, what the hell would I call it? And then I thought, well, it's made of sausage. Sausage is made out of a pig. It's like a pig, except it's in a blanket.
He's in a little blanket. You keep saying that it's stuffed into the, like you just wrap it around
it's
the little
stuffed.
Sausage. Yeah. Yeah, you wrap the pastry around the little sausage, like a little blanket. What?
Say it. I was going to say, we're stuffing the sausage after dark.
We're not stuffing the sausage. We're gently wrapping it after
yeah,
dark.
Like, yeah, it's such an American thing. Like in England, they probably have something that's called like driver in a Surrey. You know, that's a saddle on a horse. Now, have you ever put a little chocolate icing on your ice cream? We call it saddle on a horse. In America, it's called a pig in a blanket.
Well, so like the English toad in the hole. Like,
right, a toad in a hole.
My mom always called that Humpty Dumpty.
God. Like he bust open and died?
I guess. But I've never heard anyone else except my mother call them Humpty Dumpties. So I think maybe she just made it up. I don't know what we call it here. Toad in the hole, I guess.
Attention.
Fellow Americans, attention, what do you call it?
My men and my horses.
When you have a...
I'm going to need you to try to put back together that Eggman who fell off the walls. Very important.
Hey, you know that it never says that he's an egg? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to just break you.
I'm not the one broken. It's Mr. Dumpty that's broken.
It never says in the rhyme, it never says he's an egg.
It's just illustrated that he looks like an egg.
Right. It never says he's an egg.
So is he's a man who had a great fall? They couldn't put him back together again? I bet there's some seedy shit behind this little
tale, some seedy shit behind every like nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
But fellow Americans, what do you call it when you have a piece of bread and you cut a hole out of the middle and then you put an egg in the middle? What's that called? Because I've always called it Humpty Dumpty.
It's probably, in America, it's probably called a fart in a balloon. Ward on a cat's back.
You have to stop.
Yeah, down here we call that spare tire and a shitter.
Do you know how much trouble I have breathing normally right now? You have to stop. Okay, moving on.
Please. It's been 4 hours. We're losing listeners by the minute.
Samantha Tillman.
I could see Samantha Tillman taking non-alcoholic Jello shots.
Ooh.
They're just Jello shots. Delightful. They don't have booze in them.
Love it.
She's not a woo girl.
No, she's not. Lindsay Prestige.
Favorite part. And these are party snacks, right?
Like, yeah, like hors d'oeuvres. Like
hors d'oeuvres.
Yes. Canapes.
Oh, canapes. Yes. I think that Lindsay Prestige, whose last name is now Prestige.
No, it's
not. Because she got married to a magician.
And to a prestigious magician.
Yes. I think she'll have a little caviar on an overpriced cracker.
Absolutely. Yes. Ugh, caviar. Melissa Hunter.
Cake pops.
Ooh. Unexpected. I like it. Love a cake pop. Yum. Nikki Tutils. Nick Tillman.
Cigars.
That's his favorite hors d'oeuvre is a cigar.
His favorite hors d'oeuvres, I'm going to say, are just a plain pretzel.
Ooh, like a soft pretzel?
Just a pretzel.
Like a little tiny hard pretzel?
You're like, oh, Nikki, you want us to bring you anything? Just bring me the bowl of pretzels.
Okay.
You want anything to drink with that? No.
These pretzels are making me thirsty. These
pretzels are making me thirsty.
From Seinfeld, yes. Natalia Wood.
Oh, probably like lox. You know what lox?
Oh, yeah.
Probably lox on a finely toasted New York bagel.
With some capers?
Yeah, with the little little miniature bagels that they make sometimes.
Yum. Cream cheese, lox, capers. Stellar. Kelly Moore.
Kelly Moore is going to have ants on a log.
I love ants on a log.
No, that's another piece in a blanket. And ants on a log.
Ants on a log, if you are not familiar, is a stick of celery, which you put peanut butter in the middle of that celery in like the well, and then you put raisins on the peanut butter.
I always like to call them ants marching, John.
I prefer my ants on a log without the ants. I just like the peanut butter and celery.
That's called poop in a chute.
If you've never tried it, really, you should give it a try because it's surprise. It's like you wouldn't think the two flavors go together, but they really do. And the textures are lovely. So good. I really want ants on a log right now. Chris White, who sent us some delectable English treats as part of our Honey Dukes mail order.
Oh, my God.
Candy exchange. Yes. So good.
And Chris is going to go for a fine cheese.
Ooh.
Maybe a soft cheese, like a brie.
Yes. Oh.
He's a refined gentleman.
Yes. Love a brie. Amber Biggs. Henley just had a birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday, Henley.
Happy birthday, Henley.
If you're listening.
I hope so.
Also, if you are listening, please don't use the language that we use.
Ever.
We are trying to be funny and we're adults.
Don't be like
and we're neither.
Us. Ever. Yeah. Just do the opposite of what you think we would do in life. Yeah. That'd be good.
She's going to have the little cucumber sandwiches.
With, what is it, like usually cream cheese in the middle, right?
Yes.
Yum.
This is making your pregnant self so hungry.
Oh my God, I want it so bad. I want everything. Maeve Richards.
Maeve's going to go for the shrimp cocktail.
Ooh, shrimp cocktail. Oh, fancy. I feel like Maeve is a classy, fancy, fancy person. How about Josh Kennedy?
I think Josh is going to have the Cavarsier Pops, frozen Cavarsier Pops that I just invented.
Yum. Yum.
Remember the ladies' man?
Courvoisier. I think Courvoisier might have too much alcohol to totally freeze. So you would have to cut it with something that, like maybe orange juice?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, whatever that sounds
Mr.
nice.
Whatever Mr. Kennedy wants.
Whatever Mr. Kennedy, whatever you want, we'll make it happen. How about Faith Kenfield?
I think Faith is an olive gal.
Olives. I was going to say you should say it like your Hey John voice, because Hey John is like one of her favorite things on the show. Hey John.
Who's?
Faith.
Faith.
Yeah.
You got to have faith. George Michael said you got to have faith. Hey, Faith. Why'd you eat all the olives, man? Save some for John. I hope I have a good time tonight.
How about Breanne Brown?
Oh, the Cleveland clam dip. Very famous. Cleveland's known for its clams.
Yes, Cleveland, you know, being on the ocean.
And everything. Yeah. Maybe there's clams in Lake Erie.
Are there lake clams? Is that a thing? Yeah,
Jordan Lake has clams.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Are you making this up?
Suckers.
Yeah. Like, why would you know that?
They're strong, too. You should see their muscles.
Okay, so you are fucking with me. Great.
I'm not.
Uh-huh.
But really, they're really big.
Okay. All right. I'm just completely undecided about whether or not I believe you. How about Daniel Marks? Speaking of the triangle.
Well, I think Dave would say, you ain't never had my cornbread. Daniel's going to have cornbread.
Oh, love cornbread. Mm.
You know, I did see Dave Matthews Band play at Farm Aid in like 2014 or whenever it was that it was in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And Dave came out and he said, you know, people would come out like Neil Young and stuff are there. And they're like, if we don't support local farmers, then we can say goodbye to food security and da da da. And, you know, people are like, you know, saying a little something on the count of it's Farm Aid.
That's kind
Dave
of the point.
Came out and said, hey, I mean, I like tomatoes. I like cucumbers.
Thanks, Dave. Good job.
I like beans. And he did say something appropriate later, but that's how he started. And we immediately started laughing.
That is hysterical. Wasn't John with you?
He was, but he left.
For Dave Matthews.
He said, I'm not doing this. I need alcohol. And he left. And he didn't come back until like the very last song of Dave Matthews. He's like, my God, I could still hear that marble mouth all the way over at the concession stand.
Meanwhile, he comes back to the lawn seating and Dave goes, hey, John.
Hey, John. Glad you can make it back. Missed the whole set, man.
God. Oh, Lord.
I love David Matthews.
How about Jennifer Ayers, who just sent us the sweetest baby presents, like too generous and so yeah, sweet. So oh, my sweet. God.
Jennifer Ayers is going to have those vegan meatballs that Josh makes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Them things are so good.
Okay, so here's what you do. You get yourself some meatballs, vegan or otherwise, and you mix it equal parts Heinz chili sauce, if you can find it. If not, a really good spicy non-sweet barbecue sauce will do. And grape jelly. And you mix all of that together.
They're so good.
It's so good. Mallory Gallagher.
Mallory Gallagher is going to have the pickled watermelon rinds.
Naturally. What did we... Didn't we have pickled watermelon at that fancy vegan restaurant?
We did.
So good.
At the green room.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Very intense and unexpected flavor. Was it the rind? It was pickled watermelon.
Yeah, it was the rind.
Yum. So good. How about Sarah Epting?
What's Sarah like? Sarah will have the popcorn balls.
Oh, popcorn balls.
Did you ever go trick-or-treating and you get a popcorn ball?
Yes. Not enough people do popcorn balls anymore. Although nowadays you're encouraged to not eat like home-baked goods. But I mean, if it's someone you know on your street, like...
I don't care. It doesn't matter. Let her kid eat anything.
Maybe I'll make popcorn balls for the holidays. Love that idea. Josh Bailey, our manager of mischiefs, probably going to be effing Marmite, which he apparently likes.
That's what it's going to be. It's going to be Marmite on toast.
He said, in his words, I don't hate it.
Guys,
so
we tried Marmite.
We tried the Marmite.
Now, here's what I'll say about Marmite. Just because I kind of liked it at first. I was like, it's not bad. And then I took more bites and wanted to kill myself.
It turned on you.
Because it tastes like airplane tire rubber.
Right.
But in the tiniest little bit, it is salty and has such a strong umami flavor to it that I could see where like putting like three little dots on something would make it good. At first, I thought I liked it. I was like, oh, exciting. I kind of like this. And I tasted it again, and I was like, my dear Lord.
I just put it in my mouth and screamed, like, after dark.
I'm Marmite not.
It's awful. How about Kara Heller?
I think Kara Heller is going to have macaron.
Macaron? Love a macaron. Vicky Gutherless, Vicky and Rick.
I don't know. You tell me, Vicky, what's going to be at the wedding?
Right.
Probably pigs in a blanket.
Pigs in a blanket.
I think she's going to have, a British wedding. Oh, the pastry, the little puffy pastries. I think she's going to have a mince pie.
Ooh, because it is. Isn't that like a holiday thing? And it's getting really close to the holidays.
Yeah. We got to go to the German Christmas markets, hon.
Like the ones in Germany?
Yes.
Yeah, we've got to make that happen.
God.
Let's just like pop this kid out and make sure like it's all healthy and safe and everything. And then the three of us will go to the German Christmas
Everyone
markets.
I've ever talked to that's been to Germany said it's amazing.
Oh, we've got to go. Yes. How about Dean Heath?
Chicky Nuggies.
Chicky Nuggies. Yeah. I love Chicky Nuggies.
Or as he calls them, Panther Bites.
Panther Bites. Heather Bevels.
Oh, you and Heather like a lot of the same things.
Yes. We love an hors d'oeuvre.
I think Heather's going to have a little traveling fondue.
She loves fondue, as do I. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's brilliant.
Imagine for an hors d'oeuvre, they carry around like the cheese and the thing. And then they're like, would you like a so-and-so? And you take the toothpick and you dip it in the cheese and then you put it on your little plate.
Fucking brilliant. Why has no one done this? Oh, probably because carrying the flaming hot cheese is a little dangerous.
Yeah.
That's what I would imagine. How about Ben Clark?
I feel like Ben Clark's the type of man that's just going to eat hot wings and be at the wedding. Where did he get a plate of hot wings?
Right.
We don't even have hot wings at our wedding.
Yeah. He found them somewhere. I love it. Pete Collins.
Pete Collins will probably have a small fruit tart.
Oh, God. I love those with the little custard and the Michael Terry.
Michael Terry will just have a piece of cake.
Yum.
And he'll say, last year's party, I did not get my
piece. I did not get my cake.
Maybe, I'm pretty sure that piece was my piece of cake.
Michael Terry, do you do a good impression of the guy from Office Space?
I feel like he might be able to.
I feel like everyone should have that impression in their back pocket. It's fantastic. Cake is the greatest. Lexi Phage.
Lexi. It's so hard to think about like hors d'oeuvres that I know about.
Yeah. Mini quiche. You know, that's one possibility. Lots of things in miniature.
I think Leslie Phage is going to have a bruschetta.
Bruschetta. Bruschetta.
Isn't that the tomato, the basil, and the mozzarella?
Usually it's just like tomato, onions, basil. It's like a melange. That's
right. I'm thinking of
that caprese.
Caprese salad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yum,
does
all
that
of
make
that.
Make me caprese.
Mozzarella brands have had a really big missed opportunity for that commercial. You. How about Hannah Gibbs, the Bovinator?
The kid could be like, can you make caprese to his mom?
Yes, absolutely.
Right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hannah Gibb, the Bovinator.
It's the Bovinator. She lifts her loving to the sky like a big old elevator.
God help us. This poor child.
Well, she's the Bovinator. She probably likes taters. I'm going to say tater tots.
Ooh.
Or she likes to call them Bovinator tots.
Bovinator tots. Oh,
get tots. Your own tots, Hannah. God.
Tots. It's like the third time we've brought up Napoleon Dynamite this season. It's very strange. Amy Sophia Mayer.
Oh, Amy has like been all over the place. I can't imagine all the different foods that she's tried in the right? world.
Something exotic, I feel like.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? How about like the stuffed grape leaves, like the dolmas? Like
the dolmas. Yes. I bet she likes those.
Those are so good. Oh, God. How about Senior Jorgensen?
Senior will have one of those little cheddar biscuits. You know, those little miniature cheddar biscuits?
Stop
that
it.
You love them things a lot.
I would.
Your face just got like really, your eyes got really big and your face lit up.
I would take like 10 of those to the face right now. Like, I'm not even kidding. How about Larissa Oatman?
Oh, she's going to have my favorite snack. Now, I think it might be a little tacky for a wedding or something, but right. it would be a good hors d'oeuvre.
Okay.
I think I'm going to make this hors d'oeuvre next time we have a party.
Okay.
And that is saltine crackers with peanut butter in the middle.
You do love that. That is
probably my favorite snack of all time.
Do you like to put jelly with it too, or just the peanut butter?
I don't mind. If I put jelly with it, I want a sweeter cracker.
Really?
Yeah.
There's not enough sweetness in the jelly for you?
Like when I was a kid, I would do saltines with peanut butter, or I would do Ritz crackers with peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, that seems like too sweet.
But don't
sweet.
Trust that goober shit. Where the jelly and the peanut butter is in the same jar
F
and it's
that.
In a little stripey because
nobody eats that.
The peanut butter's not as good as regular peanut butter and the jelly's not as good.
Nobody actually eats
no
that.
No offense, Goober. You make a decent product. I'm sure you make a lot of people happy. It's just not for me.
Right. It's not for me either.
Yeah. Don't drop us as a sponsor.
How about Kit and Demi?
I would say brownies.
Yum. Yum. That's phenomenal.
Especially the corners with the little crusty bits.
Do you know they make a special pan that you can, it's all corners. Like it's shaped like a snake and you put the brownie batter in it and it creates just like all corners basically. So good.
Crust punk corners.
Yes. And the, sure. And for our extra shout out, you'll know this one off the top of your head, probably your brother, Tim Wilson, co-host of Civil Gore podcast. What would be his preferred?
Oh, I got to think about the things that he likes to eat.
Yeah.
Tim was a really picky eater when he was young and now is not a picky eater.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Tim always loves the shrimp.
Oh, really? Scrimps?
Yeah. I know he gave shrimp cocktail to someone.
Yeah.
Because we recently were at a party and Tim ate his weight in shrimp. I will say the shrimp.
The shrimp. Just the shrimp in whatever form. Shrimp puffs. Shrimp balls. Shrimp. I don't like shrimp, so I can't like think of the ways that you can.
And then after
shrimp.
He ate his hors d'oeuvre, you know what he probably did?
What?
Went and recorded his podcast, the Civil Gore podcast.
Yes, you can find them anywhere you get your podcasts. Civil Gore. It's pretty much exactly what you think it is.
Ding
ding. It's about horror movies. Co-host Brian from the north, and Tim from the south. Yeah. It's brilliant.
It's
and
a
wonderful.
Civil gore.
It's a civil gore.
It's super funny. And Tim has dulcet tones.
Very dulcet tones.
He doesn't sound prepubescent like me. Like he has like
no.
He has like a normal adult's voice. You
the
know,
two
like,
no, the two like of you person. Sound more alike than you think. You really do. I promise. As always, thank you to all of our marauders, all of our patrons, and all of you listening, because we love you.
It's getting late.
Yeah.
It's time to disrobe and say goodnight to all you listeners out there. And thank you for listening to The Fox and the Foxhound
After Dark.
Shh.